ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 23 टेक्स्ट 5 through 9 ट्रांसलेशन टेक्स्ट 5। This form of Sisumar has its head downward and its body coiled. On the end of its tail is the planet Dhruva. On the body of its tail are the planets of demigods, Prajapati, Agni, Indra and Dharma. And at the base of its tail are the planets of demigods, Dhata and Vidhata. Where the hips might be on the Sisumar are the seven saintly sages like Vasishtha and Angira. The coiled body of the Sisumar chakra turns towards its right side, on which the 14 constellations from Abhijit to Punarvasu are located. On its left side are the 14 stars from Pushya to Uttarashadha. Thus, its body is balanced because its sides are occupied by an equal number of stars. On the back of the Sisumar is the group of stars known as Ajavhiti, and on its abdomen is the Ganges that flows in the sky, the Milky Way. Text 6. On the right and left sides of where the loins might be on the Sisumar chakra are the stars named Punarvasu and Pushya. Ardra and Ashlesha are on its right and left feet. Abhijit and Uttarashadha are on its right and left nostrils. Shravana and Purvashadha are its right and left eyes. And Dhanishta and Mula are on its right and left ears. The 8 stars from Magha to Anuradha, which mark the southern course, are on the ribs of the left side of its body. And the 8 stars from Margasira to Purvabhadra, which mark the nostrils, northern course, are the ribs on the right side. Sattavisha and Jyeshtha are on the right and left shoulders. Text 7. On the upper chin of Sisumar is Agasthi. On its lower chin, Yamaraj. On its mouth, Mars. On its genitals, Saturn. On the back of its neck, Jupiter. On its chest, the Sun. And within the core of its heart, Narayan. Within its mind is the moon, on its navel, Venus, and on its breasts, the Ashwini Kumaras. Within its life air, which is known as Pranapana, is Mercury. On its neck is Rahu. All over its body are comets. And in its pores are the numerous stars. Text 8, translation. My dear King, the body of the Sisumar, as thus described, should be considered the external form of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Morning, noon and evening, one should silently observe the form of Lord as the Sisumar Chakra and worship him with this mantra. O Lord, who has assumed the form of the time, O resting place of all planets moving in different orbits, O Master of all demigods, O Supreme Person, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you and meditate upon you. Text 9, translation. The body of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, which forms the Sisumar Chakra, is the resting place of all the demigods and all the stars and planets. One who chants this mantra to worship that Supreme Person 3 times a day, morning, noon and evening, will surely be freed from all sinful reactions. If one simply offers his obeisances to this form, or remembers this form three times a day, all his recent sinful activities will be destroyed. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada. Summarizing the entire description of the planetary systems of universe, Srila Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur says that one who is able to meditate upon this arrangement as the Virata Rupa or Vishwarupa, the external body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and worship Him three times a day by meditation, will always be free from all sinful reactions. Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur estimates that Dhruva Loka, the pole star, is 3,800,000 yojanas above the sun. Above Dhruva Loka by 10 million yojanas is Mahar Loka. Above Mahar Loka by 20 million yojanas is Jana Loka. Above Jana Loka by 80 million yojanas is Tapa Loka. And above Tapa Loka by 120 million yojanas is Satya Loka. Thus, the distance from the sun to Satya Loka is 233,800,000 yojanas, or 1,874,400,000,000 miles. The Vaikuntha planets begin 26,200,000 yojanas above Satyalok. Thus, the Vishnu Puran describes that the covering of the universe is 260,000,000 yojanas away from the sun. The distance from the sun to earth is 100,000 yojanas, and below the earth is 70,000 yojanas are the seven lower planetary systems called Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Rasatala and Patala. Below these lower planetary by 30,000 yojanas, Sesanaga is lying on the Garbhodaka ocean. That ocean is 249,800,000,000 yojanas deep. Thus, the total diameter of the universe is approximately 500,000,000 yojanas, or 4 billion miles. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 5th canto, 23rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Sisumar Planetary System. Hare Krishna. So, the blessings upon all assembled Vaishnavas, I'd like to speak something on the ongoing propaganda against godless theories of this world. Like His Grace Chakravarti Prabhu, He inspired us a lot by speaking on Sunday morning. And when He spoke, it was like His sincere service for Srila Prabhupada. He just keeps speaking sincerely from His heart. And He spoke to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission and to serve the mankind in at large, especially. So I'll try to follow His footsteps in trying to speak in the same spirit. So when we speak of acquiring knowledge, there are only two ways a man can acquire knowledge. Because every human being by nature is inquisitive, and he tries to know everything about this world, especially the creation, which is very elaborately described in the scripture. So knowledge can be obtained either from Vedic scriptures, which is eternal, or through mundane knowledge, or the scientific knowledge, which is gathered through our sense perception and experiences. Now, the question is, which form of knowledge we should accept? Because knowledge is always one who speaks about the truth, and it cannot be changed. If one form of knowledge clashes with another form, that means one of them is true, both cannot be true. So because there are some fundamental differences between acquiring knowledge by these two means, therefore we see there are kind of classes. But if you just look at the scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, which was given by big personalities like Vyasadev, it was heard by big personalities like Parikshit Maharaj, like His Holiness Radhakrishna Swami, he was pointing out, how can such people or personalities who heard Srimad Bhagavatam in such a exalted spirit could be regarded as mythology as projected by many current theories? But how such a exalted personality like Vyasadeva would write on it? Or when Parikshit Maharaj was especially hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukhdev Goswami, who was speaking it, why should he speak about certain mythology when he is about to die? When a child goes to rest, sleeping, it is okay to speak about mythology, some stories. But when a person is going to sleep forever, in a sense, when he is going to actually leave the body, it's not time to speak stories. There has to be certain reason why he is speaking all this knowledge. And that too, Srimad Bhagavatam is regarded by Vyasadeva as the ripened fruit of all Vedic literature. That means the knowledge given is the topmost and authentic. So all the knowledge that is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, whether it is creation or whatever, is spoken in perfect understanding that these are the true knowledge. But however, over a period of time, as Chakravarti Prabhu was explaining on Sunday morning, things kept changing, and the common mass, the people who were led by certain leaders, started to doubt the scriptures. So in today's class, I'll try to cover certain points. The first is how the scientific knowledge evolved. Second is why it does not support the presence of God. Third, what made people, when I say people, it's common mass, what made people lose faith in scriptures? And fourth, how to reconcile? Is there any way that we can reconcile the whole issue? So to begin with, first is how the science evolved. So in a way, we can see that science has actually evolved from religion. So this is a thing which hardly every people think that science has come on its own. But if you look at the history of science, it is a fact that it evolved from religion. The fundamental knowledge that they require to begin this branch of knowledge was actually scriptures, Vedic knowledge. It was Aristotle, a Greek philosopher, who spoke about five elements of this whole existence, that is earth, water, air, fire, and ether. Now, these five elements he spoke, but he did not spoke about the subtle elements which the scriptures provides, like mind, false ego, and intelligence. So if you see Bhagavad Gita also speaks about these five elements, but it speaks about more. But why he didn't took it? Probably he did not understood how to handle mind, intelligence, and ego. So he just took those things which he can perceive. And in a way you can say, this is the starting point of deviation from scriptures. And taking these points, they started what is called, the whole scientific theory start to progress or grow gradually. So nobody says or there is no history, no point in the history where you will see that a scientist started questioning religion. It was religionist or spiritualist who questioned science always, because it was building up on its own as a separate thing. So therefore, you will be surprised to know that many scientific organizations make a big time research on Srimad Bhagavad Gita, even today, just to find what are the information which we can take out and try to apply in our mechanistical world and take out some, you know, ingredients from it. Even today, big research organizations like NASA and all these places, they try to study these scriptures. And in fact, the scientists know the scriptures, hardcore scientists know the scriptures better than many of the common man who propagate on behalf of science. It's kind of blind faith. So now the question is, the second question is, why the science fails to support the presence of God? Why does it not support God? That's the second question. So it will be a nice, it will be like a good beginning with Sir Isaac Newton, who is, we can say, the father of physics, founding physics. He is the one who found physics. And from Newton, actually the real turning point begins. So although all these persons who are dealing with science and developing science, natural that they do it from the scriptures and they had certain faith in God, including Newton. All these people, although they are trying to study the nature, trying to acquire the knowledge through their own senses and formulating certain mathematical models, because their upbringing was in a religious background, they are all God-believing. They believed in God. Even we can see there are so many devotees from science background, still they have a strong faith in God. So it is not surprising that Newton also had a similar faith and trust in God. So one point he made while developing all these theories, which are the like founding principle, foundations for the physics to come in next many centuries, he said that he firmly believed that God make regular adjustments in the laws of nature. But then when he studied the nature and tried to make a mathematical model out of it, he formulated what is known as laws of motions. Everybody is, you know, every ninth class student studies in the school nowadays. And these laws were very, very significant, because these laws allow one to determine what is going to happen next. It's like if a planet is moving, such and such state is there, right now sun is there, moon is there, Jupiter is there, and these laws allow a person to calculate when there is going to be an eclipse, or if the cars are moving in certain speed, or the flight is taking off, will there be accident or not? So all these things can be determined with the help of these equations. Therefore, this branch of science, when it evolved, they called it deterministic science. That means you can determine everything, provided you know certain situation. And you can avoid certain mishap by adjusting the current situation. That means a person is going to have control. So if this is so, that everything is follow certain laws and nothing can be changed from one situation to other, then what is the role of God? There is no need of God. So although Newton himself believed in the presence of God, but his theories did not allow a presence of God, and he was helpless. Although he himself believed in God, but his theory says there is no need of God. It is as simple as that. So in this way, although his faith remained in God, but his theories did not allow. Therefore, he was criticized by his atheistic colleagues, who said, how can you say there is a God when these things are not there? But then, Newton's belief in God is not unusual. It's not that he just blindly stuck to the point, yes, God is there, God is there. No, there are certain points for which he had to believe in God. Like he was saying, if there is a creation, there has to be a creator, which is logical. He can't help himself but to accept that creation means creator has to be there. God has to be there. So in this way, although he was criticized from the atheistic colleagues or contemporaries, but he himself could not give up the idea of God. So in this way, although we see there are certain things which indicate God is there, but the theories which are strongly evolving, you know, slowly in the medieval time, that did not allow God to interfere with the laws of nature. So therefore, the presence of God is questioned within the scientific community. And therefore, while developing this scientific theory, they were forced to make certain assumptions on which they have to base their scientific theory. Now, these assumptions are necessary, otherwise they cannot deny the presence of God. And when we say assumptions, that means something has to be assumed without knowing the background. Assumptions means I do not know, therefore I assume. That is assumption, as simple as that. So there are three assumptions they made, which I will read now. So the scientist's attempt to understand the origin of universe in purely physical terms is based on three assumptions. First, that all phenomena can be completely explained by natural laws expressed in the language of mathematics. Second, that these physical laws apply everywhere and at all times. And third, that the fundamental natural laws are simple. So these are three assumptions which they are forced to make to support their own theories. Now, all these assumptions can be questioned, and there is no reason why everybody must accept them. For example, I will take just one assumption, that the fundamental natural laws are simple. They say everything that we see and observe, they are governed by laws which are very, very simple, and we must accept this. And when they do that, they have to develop a theory which indicates that the laws are simple. So anything that indicates complexity, they'll skip it aside. They cannot help themselves. So as Chakravarti Prabhu was explaining the other day about the procreation or development of a baby within the womb, so just the sperm and ovum, they meet and they form one single cell. And this single cell then duplicates, then they quadruple, you know, they expand more and more. And from one single cell, many, many millions and billions of cells are manufactured. And the manufactured cells are different from the original cell, like the cell of nails or hairs or bone or muscles. Different organs are there. All cells are different. So one may say it looks like a simple cell which just multiplied. But if you look at it, that simple cell has much more complexity than all the cells that evolved from it, because it has all the data, all the informations that is going to manufacture all the subsequent cells. That means the origin, instead of a simple thing, is actually more complex. So although they assume that all natural laws have fundamentally simple, so that these questions can be raised, that these assumptions need not be universal. Or like one scientist himself says, he's a Nobel Prize winning physicist from German. His name is Eugen Wigner. And he says that the probability of the existence of a self-duplicating unit is zero. That means if you take all the knowledge of physics, all the knowledge of chemistry, whatever science is there, and you try to apply that, what is the probability that one cell within hours will duplicate to another cell or degenerate another cell? He says there is no such laws which can explain this. It is not possible. Just the things comes and on its own it becomes duplicate. It's very difficult to actually appreciate. Therefore he says, since the ability to reproduce is one of the fundamental characteristics of all living organisms, Wigner concludes that our present understanding of physics and chemistry does not enable us to explain the phenomenon of life. Also, to assume that everything is simple and complex thing come is actually therefore questionable. We can also see in our day-to-day life that somebody, say man creates a computer. Okay. So, computer and whatever programs it has in its hard disks are simpler than man's brain. So what is simple, its origin is complex. Similarly, if we assume that God is the original creator, therefore he is the most complex person to understand. It is said in scripture, of course, that Krishna cannot be understood, he is unlimited, nobody can understand him. So therefore, if we just shift the assumptions, then religion makes so much sense. But if you have these assumptions, then whatever theory one makes has to be guarded by these assumptions, and therefore God cannot be allowed. So in this we can see how the assumptions restrict a scientist, although he personally he may have belief in God, restricts him to accept or adopt the concept of religion. So in this way, the whole scientific community is in a kind of confusion. They don't know if they believe in their heart God is there, then that belief is not supported by what theory they create. So it is a kind of situation. So therefore, all the scientists themselves have some understanding and concept of God. At the same time, side by side, during all this evolution of science, so around the beginning of 19th century especially, certain scholars were attracted to the antiquity of Indian origins, especially the scriptures. And they wanted to study especially the Puranas. But the Puranas, it is said that the most voluminous Sanskrit scriptures, most voluminous, even Mahabharata and Ramayana, all these epic do not match the quantity of, or all Vedas, Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, the shortest thing. All these things combined, still, they don't match the volume of Puranas. So therefore, many scholars are attracted to do research. But when they saw the volume, and when they saw the Sanskrit, which they cannot make out in head or tail, they thought, it is something we don't want to do anymore. And at this time, the British government actually employed two big scholars. Their names were, one is Vance Kennedy, the other is H.H. Wilson, two persons. So the Wilson, without understanding the details of the scriptures, now we know it's very common thing that if I want to study medicines, I have to go to a doctor. This parampara system we know. And these people try to understand things on their own strength. And obviously, suppose some of us are asked to answer, say something about, say, relativity. What can we say? Or suppose you try to make an attempt to study relativity, how much you can understand on our own? It's very difficult. Just like in the time of Einstein, one reporter asked Einstein, he said, sir, we heard that there are only 3 persons in the entire planet who can understand your theory of relativity. So, can you comment on this? So when he asked this question, Einstein started thinking. So he thought, what is this? I'm asking such a simple questions and this man is thinking, taking a long time to answer this question. He said, "Sir, these are simple questions. Why don't you answer my question?" He said, "See, I'm just thinking, who is the third person?" So three persons knew. So he was thinking, who is the third person? Even that was such a rare thing that people can actually understand. Actually, the third person was an Indian. So we can see, this also makes a point here, that these scriptures which are given by the forefathers of Indians, the like Sukhdev Goswami, Vyasdev, people say they are like mythology. But how can it be so? When our current people can understand and appreciate some new science developed in a certain different part of the world, and actually later on develop it to get Nobel Prize also, how can the forefathers of such people be such foolish to write mythology? It is questionable, it's a point. So anyway, so when we try to study something which is not our field, especially, and a very difficult subject matter, it is obvious that we will not understand anything out of it. Similarly, all these Indologists, they try to study Puranas. Obviously, they could not understand anything because it's sheer quantity. So, what was their conclusion? What did Wilson said? Wilson said that all these are actually developed by later scholars just to please the kings of those times. They wrote all these stories of the Puranas so that it will be pleasing to hear to the kings. That was their kind of interpretation of Puranas ultimately. But then the other scholar who was also side by side studying these Puranas, Vance Kennedy, his point was that there is barely any assertions which supports the argument given by Wilson. He says, "I also studied these Puranas." And then His Holiness Devamrita Swami in his book, In Search of Vedic India, he writes very, very, very elaborately why the Puranas are not later date Vedic scriptures, they're authentic Vedic scriptures. He gives many points. And one of them that within the Vedas, within the Upanishads, there are mentions of Puranas. So how can Vedas point at Puranas when it is going to be written later date? It's not possible. So when the Vedas, Atharva Vedas or some Vedas is pointing that Puranas and Itihasas within the Vedic literature, the hardcore Vedic literature, that means they were existing at the same time, eternally, side by side. It's not that they were created later. So in this way, these points can be easily thrown out, or you can cancel them. But the interesting thing is Vance Kennedy, although he said whatever Wilson is saying has no background to it, still it was accepted. So in a way, these Indologists, they have no knowledge of science and they have no knowledge of Puranas. But they made statements which is still supported by the general mass. That is the misfortune situation. If you read any history book, the arts branch of the education, or anything that writes about Puranas, they write in strict disciplic succession of these Indologists, saying the Puranas are later creations and this and that, so many stories. So therefore, it is, in a way, the scientists begin the destructions of faith in God, although they didn't want it, they couldn't understand why is it so. They were helpless in one sense. It is the Indologists who thoroughly smashed the faith of modern, especially the Indians, in their faith in scriptures all over the world, especially Indians in Puranas. So therefore, we can say that this faith in scriptures was broken because of some very, very gross kind of mistakes committed by our so-called, you know, leaders in educations. Now, why they did it? There are many reasons why Wilson person was accepted. Because if Wilson's version were accepted by the British government, it's a political reason also. However, politics is there, everything is destroyed. So when you include politics in any kind, any branch of, you know, education knowledge, that knowledge is immediately polluted. So these are the individuals who are employed by politicians. So whatever came out was completely, you know, destructive. Wilson's verdict was much suppler one for subjugating the barbaric Indian. That is the reason that is said. The Indians can be controlled if they accept the Wilson's versions that Puranas are all stories, mythology. So once people lose faith in the scripture, whom say they should believe? They should believe in the politicians, the leaders, or the scientists, whoever it may be. So in this way, we can see that the faith was systematically breaking down, although the cause was not very genuine. And the fourth part is that, then how to reconcile? Is there any way? So devotees basically speak about science and challenge, like Prabhupada was in his transcendental anger, he was smashing again and again all the scientists. So why should devotees do it? Why are we speaking about these things which have... We can just accept our thing and just go ahead. Let them accept whatever they accept and let them go ahead. Why do we have to present all these things? This is a very poignant point. So we can see in the history of our sampradayas, Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he, in a way, although he banned us from speaking to Mayavadis, he himself preached to them. He was happy with his association of devotees, pure devotees, and he was performing his, you know, pastimes, bhakti and everything, Jagannath Puri, Vrindavan, wherever he went. But why did he come out and try to help the Mayavadis? Because he was very, very compassionate. And he knew these people are in ignorance and they don't have any future. And because he could understand that aspect, he, God himself, there is no doubt about it. So he tried to help them in a compassionate mode. Similarly, all these presentations made by devotees, everything, is ultimately to attract the attention of a common mass from a wrong kind of faith to the right kind of faith, first of all, and also to help the scientists to come to the shelter of Krishna, in one sense. So this is a compassion nature, not for a debate, which is scholarly arguments, but rather to help each other to ultimately understand what is the true knowledge and come to the lotus feet of Krishna. That is the whole idea. And secondly, also we can see, although Newton himself believed in God, but his theory did not support it, later his theory in a way inspired atheistic propensity in people. So therefore, taking his theory, the scientists were thinking that towards the end of 19th century, they are thinking that they have cracked everything about the nature, that everything we know, everything is in our hand. Now we can do whatever we want. So another reason why they made these assumptions, although there are certain way we should not accept these assumptions of science. One thing, they assume that laws are simple because then they can possibly understand it. As I was saying, when they make assumptions that everything is simple, suppose everything were complex, they cannot understand it. If they cannot understand it, then how can they control it? They cannot control it. Therefore, assumption has to be that everything has a simple background. Therefore, I can understand them, then I can control them. But it is not like that. So in this way, you can see the things were developing, and at a certain point, they thought that they can know anything about the creations. And at this time only, when they try to apply this Newtonian mechanics, Newtonian laws of motions, whatever it may be, to understand the properties of light, they found that the light does not obey any of these laws. So they could not understand why is it so. So from that point, what developed is called theory of relativity. That's what Einstein's contribution is. Trying to explain how the behavior of light. So, but when such things came up, then came quantum mechanics while studying the structure of atom. And Newtonian theories actually failed to explain all these things. So the scientists were thinking that with Newtonian mechanics we can explain everything, but then they understood that they cannot. And then they were humbled at that point. So even after finding quantum mechanics, there were so many discrepancies, the scientists got very, very confused. It's the beginning of the 20th century. And one of my professors in Delhi University, he was telling us that many of the scientists actually went to the church and knelt before Christ, saying, actually, we cannot know anything. Or try to, they're praying, help us so that we can know something. That was their situation. And also, another professor in IIT, he was saying us that there is a second law of thermodynamics, which is very simple, but there is no reason why it is the way it is. So the many scientists spent literally centuries trying to disprove it, but they were unsuccessful. So these are things which forced science in one way to accept presence of a divine force. And in fact, as the experiments went on, more and more, recent research in quantum mechanics that points actually there could be presence of a conscious being apart from the whole physical setup that we study. It is hinting. But because of their assumptions, again, they cannot take it wholeheartedly. But if then this knowledge of religious scriptures and science, they are taken in a broad way, not in a narrow-minded restricting oneself to one certain area, then there is a possibility that there can be reconciliation. And in this way, the scientists, they can come to lotus feet of Krishna, and the general mass, the innocent people, they can also take up the process without doubting and complete faith in Krishna. So that is the lecture. It's 9 o'clock. Thank you for listening through this whole presentation, which is not part of our regular hearing. So are there any questions? If there are questions, you can take. Otherwise, yes, bro. Mike.
Lord, you mentioned that Lord Chaitanya preached to the Mayavadis, but it's also mentioned in the scripture that one should avoid Mayavadis, that they should never be associated with them under any circumstances.
It's true.
So how can other devotees understand what their position is in relationship to the Mayavadis?
So first of all, Lord Chaitanya is God himself. The point I was trying to make there is the spirit which Lord Chaitanya had. He has compassion spirit. He saw these people are uselessly going towards, making their pave their way to hell. Pave their way to hell. So let me try to help them on the request of certain devotees. So Lord Chaitanya was able to see at the level of spirit, and therefore his compassionate nature rescued them. Similarly, when we look at people, if we have that power to see people in that compassionate mode, probably we can do that. But still, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu restricts us from doing it, unless one is exceptionally qualified and empowered by the Lord, one should not attempt to do such things. He will be hurt in that attempt spiritually. So unless we have that empowerment, or unless we have that compassion for living entities, similarly, I can speak this thing to devotees, but I cannot speak this thing to scientists. And even if I speak, there will be a heated argument because I don't have the compassion for them. This is what is going to happen. So therefore, we speak, we make a propaganda, like Prabhupada says, make propaganda. We make a propaganda just to help the innocents at the best, so that they can develop their faith more and more in Krishna and the scriptures. We don't take scientists head on, because there will be problems. There will be problems because you don't have that compassion to help them to come to lotus feet of Krishna. But those who have it, there are many, many devotees, Prabhupada, they empower them especially. They are doing it. And there are good results also. So, therefore I made that point, okay, we have to pray to the Lord probably for the, you know, empowerment, whatever. Then we can try to help people to come to lotus feet of Krishna. It's basically for the innocent. Is it? Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki Nitai Gaur Premanande.